And we are live. Welcome to the Tripod, where we break down the NRL every game, every week from a punting perspective. And this is our recap of a wild round 9. I'm Jacob Wynn. He's a Podonis. Sorry, I'm a bit frazzled because what a finish. And we're not going to bury the lead. We're going to talk straight about this game right here, which was Sharkies 29 beating the Warriors 10. But of course, I've got to say, we've just swept again. Sweep last week, sweep this week. So 5 straight best bet winners, 3-0 this week. We'll talk about them all, of course. That hinged on that Sharkies game. We won the mixed matchup again, which should have been a walk in the park today. It was anything but looking like going down. People already messaging saying we should get a justice refund because they're already resigned to that losing. Not to mention our 13 plus was our best bet, and we had a team that was reduced to 12 men with an hour to go in the contest. But as you can see with that scoreline, the Sharkies won by 19. So we won our mixed matchup. We won all our best bets for the round. I honestly reckon you could call that a couple of the greatest tips in the history of the pod. Because if you tip a team 13 plus and they have a player sent off and then another man sin binned later and you still cover by more than a converted try, then what a great bet that was. Sorry if I'm rambling a bit. I'll throw it to you, Podonis. Of course, the other thing is, my same game multi that I gave out on Dabble for that game also won, and it needed the Sharks to win the second half, which you wouldn't have thought was possible. Uphill battle, but boy, they climbed uphill and then some, didn't they?
Yeah, what a phenomenal effort. And up Cronulla. Salutes, caps a fantastic 2 weeks for us on the pod. And we had them 13 plus as our best bet, as you touched on. And yeah, Will Kennedy, and it was a fair send-off, you would say, about 20 minutes in. So Sharks had to play an hour reduced to a man down. And we saw the toll it had on Manly last week, where towards the back end of the game, it should tire the team out. But Sharks has found gear after gear after gear with a brilliant sort of defensive resilience. And then on top of all that, they end up getting a sin bin to go down to 11 men when Katoa has a head high shot or a shoulder charge. I wasn't sure which one it was there with about 15 minutes to go.
Ramian it was Ramian's that put the game. Shot on. Yep.
Ramian, yeah. And then, yeah, the Warriors seemed a bit frazzled, I think. I think similar to South last week, where the Warriors probably fell into that trap of thinking that all they had to do was just complete sets and the game was there to be won. But once the Sharks scored just before halftime to Wilton there to go 12-10 up, it was game on. And then thank God that Fitzgibbon was there this week and must have had a brilliant halftime speech. And Cronulla salutes for us and caps a fantastic weekend. Just the only downside to that, cashing all 3 best bets, was that the Sharks would have been the last leg in our multi that I gave out on Thursday night, which was over 4.5 tries as our last leg. But sadly, we didn't get to that. We had Manly to win both halves, and the second half was 22-all, which is brutal for us, conceding a last 2-minute try for the Tigers there once the game was pretty much over in garbage time. But look, we'll take it. We had 3 best bets, plus your same game we cashed, and yeah, mixed matchup. And just a joy to watch.
Yeah, when you sweep around, you give yourself a great chance to win your multis. And we were on the right track. But, like, yeah, we played Manly to win both halves. You lose by half a point. But we'll get to that game. Like, not everything went against us in that game for sure. But isn't it bizarre? Send-offs are so rare, let alone early send-offs that completely influence a result. Or, you know, well, we'll talk all about how it influenced this one. Luckily, not too negatively for us, but it happened a week ago. Our best bets were on the line. So was the mixed matchup. It went in our favor, of course, and we totally acknowledged how lucky that was. And I said the rule, it kills the contest. The irony of the send-off today, it made the game better because the Sharks would have won this game by 40 or 50, I really believe. Like, there's no doubt in my mind the Sharks would have covered and won quite comfortably if there's no send-off. But with the send-off, created this high drama, and you're thinking, Sharkies are no chance. They concede back-to-back tries right after. So it was the compounding effect of obviously down to 12, but you're also now all of a sudden from 6-0 up, you're 10-0, you're 10-6 down. I should say so many aspects to talk about, but like we bet 13 plus. It's a good bet. You're coming into game day and the Sharkies are a 15.5 point favorite. So we beat the closing line there. And just to talk about the impact of a send-off, the Sharks were up 6-0. The live line was about minus 18. Now, granted, in the next sort of 60 seconds, there was a send-off and a Warriors try. Suddenly, the Warriors were minus 2.5. So you're talking about the line flipped 20 points in the space of a send-off decision and a try, an unconverted try as well. So that's a monumental adjustment. And not to mention that the Sharkies had another player sent. So you're happy with the send-off call, Podonis? Oh, I can live with it as well. Like, I know you want to argue against it when it's your side. Like, it wasn't very forceful contact. And he didn't really hurt Walsh, but you just can't hit directly. And he reached and it didn't look good either. The fact that Kennedy jumped. Well, I'll put it this way. I think harsh send off. I think if it's 10, I can live with it. And if it happens against my bet and it's just 10 minutes, I'm not going to be like fuming that should have been a send off. So I don't think it was a certain send off. But it's the debatable one. And if it's debatable, then you can definitely argue it was a send-off. And as I say, that actually made the game so much more exciting. Not that I wanted it to be, but for the rest of the game, you're just thinking, the Warriors, I said in the comments, Sharkies have a chance. They're going to play tough. You cannot replicate the desperation that a side will show when they're reduced, especially when they're still in the fight. And obviously, that's the key. Cronulla just kept themselves in the game and kept their noses in front because, as you say, Wilton scores and they actually go in leading at halftime. And I said at halftime, Warriors will win if they play smart. And they just weren't. They're anything but. They rushed it when they did get their opportunities. But the Ramian one, he gets 10 minutes. Now, we can't argue that as well. It's very unlucky to be reduced 11 to 13.
Yeah.
There's an argument his contact was worse than Kennedy. Do you think that could have been a send-off? And do you think the fact they had already sent one off meant they went a little more lenient on the Sharkies for that decision?
Yeah, potentially. The commentators are also saying, oh, there could be a chance of going down to 11 permanently here. But let's not kid ourselves. It was an all-time effort from Cronulla. I think after the send-off in the first half, I think they only dropped the ball once and went the entire second half without dropping the ball. And on top of that, the commentators are saying during the game, it's the first time in 14 years that a team has won the match, yet alone covered 13 plus, won the match with a man down. And God knows what the stats would be for a send-off over an hour's worth, but definitely.
Yeah. And that particular game was a strong Manly side that was already up 10-0 with the send-off, and I think it happened in about the 30th minute. So that's a bit different. And they didn't then suffer another sin bin. You're right. The way that the Sharkies played was what allowed them to not only win the game but cover. Zero dropped balls the entire second half. So what they couldn't do was invite any additional pressure by the Warriors. They made only one error, which was the Talakai forward pass, which was marginal, but I can live with that. That was to Tracy. That would have been his hat trick and would have sealed the game. Well, they sealed it a few minutes later anyway. So they are literally basically flawless. There was another moment where Moylan kicked a little too heavy, gave away a seven tackle set. I consider that an error, but, you know, close to perfect, the Sharkies. In fact, I was really impressed that they played positive footy. They didn't just go one out. It's one thing to say we're going to complete high to keep ourselves in the game, but if they went one-dimensional, the Warriors would have compressed and would have smashed them, and the Warriors, I think, would have ground them out. And on the Warriors' side of things, they just never really got any territory or any repeat sets, and that's their own fault as well. Basic errors. They also kicked dead at a crucial moment. They didn't kick on a fifth tackle. And I think what people need to understand with the send-off, there's two major factors when you have a player sent off for 60. Now, the one is the obvious numerical advantage, that it's going to be easier to find an overlap in attack, or it's going to be harder to get one when you've got the ball, when you're a man short. But you can somewhat compensate for that. In attack, you may not notice it too much. And in defense, you've just got to scramble and you've got to be more disciplined. But the second big component when you have someone set up is the fatigue. But the thing was, the Sharkies never looked like they were the more tired side because they controlled possession. And that goes back to their phenomenal completion rate and better ends of sets and more desperation as well. So people are commenting and saying, like, are the Sharkies the real deal? And how impressive is that? If you would have told me that a team could win a game with a man sent off for an hour, I would have said it would have to be Melbourne or Penrith against a bottom four side. And then I could believe it. But for the Sharks to do it, that's season defining for them. That really shows it's a special team and they can go a long way when you've got that sort of belief and that sort of achievement. And the fact that just everybody lifted, that was phenomenal. And on the other side of the coin, like, that's what the Sharks will take away from it. Where did New Zealand go from here? Like, what do you say? Like, that's arguably worse than the feeling you'd have walking off 70 to 10 against the Storm, because the fact of the matter is you're leading and you're up against 12. You have to win I don't know. What do you take away from this for New Zealand, for Sean Johnson, for Nathan Brown? Not only no points after like the 30th minute, not even a line break.
Yeah, Nathan Brown had his hands in his head with about 10 minutes to go. It sums up how they perceive the game. I think the Warriors were guilty of not building enough pressure, trying to score off every play, thinking that they had a two-man advantage at one point. But when you're Cronulla, the biggest thing that you can do in your favour is make your one-on-one tackles, because people think it's easy that there's an you can create overlaps against you once you're a man down. But if you make a one-on-one tackle and you can't gang tackle, then it's very hard for the opponent to still run sideways and get around you. I think the Warriors were guilty of trying to go sideways and not through the middle there. And then I think they relieved the pressure about three or four times, giving away a penalty when the Sharks were coming out of trouble. And on top of that, Sean Johnson had a few grubbers late in the game there and went dead for some 20-meter restart sets. But I don't know. The Warriors are a tough one to gauge now, how that sort of defines their season, whether or not they come out fired up or the opposite happens and they feel like their season's almost over. If you can't beat the Sharks with a man advantage, then do you have any hope of doing anything this year? Not too sure. And on the other side for Cronulla, looking forward, and we saw it in the Manly game against the Tigers, which we'll touch on. But yeah, being down a man and having to defend for all that time, it does take a toll the week after. And perhaps we saw that with the Tigers scoring some points. So something to note next week when the Sharks play the Raiders there, Magic Round, that we'll see how their bodies recover.
Not to mention the way they might celebrate, but rightfully so. Like, that's a historic win they're going to remember for a long time. Now, one more thing I'll end on, and then we're going to rewind to the start of round nine. But we talk about Warriors game curse. We talk about how we often seem to lose our best bets. We've got a record that I think stands up against anybody in the world for a long period of time with our best bets. But it feels like we lose games that involve the Warriors, whether we're on them or whether we're against them. And that's been the case this season. We definitely got a losing record in Warriors games. And then you get a send-off 20 minutes in. And I just thought, the Warriors curse, it carries on. Not that I threw away Cronulla's chance of winning then and there, but you definitely didn't think they could win 13+. Well, now is it broken? Like, did that effort by the Sharkies, did that break the tripod Warriors curse? You guys let me know what you think. Let's scroll all the way back to another, shocking result, which you lean towards, Podonis. It's your team. So it was the Brisbane Broncos 32 beating the Rabbitohs 12 at a core stadium as well. How did they do it?
What a fantastic performance that was from the Broncos as a 12-point underdog without their best player and leader in Payne Haas and Capewell, and to go down there and put in a solid defensive performance, scoring a few tries, frustrating Souths. I think it was a great effort, and it shows that Brisbane are on the up. And we said at the start of the season that we felt that Brisbane would build into the year. I think Adam Reynolds is hitting new heights. I think you questioned him at the start of the year that if Souths were willing to let him go, then how much does he have left in the tank? It's arguably that he's playing better than he ever has in his career. And he's touching the ball a lot more, first receiver. He's become more of a creator rather than just a game manager. And I think it really suits this young team to have a strong leader like him there, steering them around. And I think Kevin Walters and the side will be buoyed by that. And they seem like a confidence team, given that they do have so many young players. I'm definitely going to be upgrading them again, because I still feel like the market might not respect them that much. But yeah, Brisbane are definitely a live chance to make the eight. And they have a big game next week against Manly to prove that.
Well, the thing is, they have gained a lot of respect because the NRL is a great competition. You get upsets, right? And I will actually, just on that note, reminded me to throw to Tristan, where he actually recorded his video just after the send-off. So he didn't want to claim victory, but he was feeling pretty good. I think they were doing cartwheels inside the Top Sport office when that send-off made it look like everyone's multis with all the big favourites across the weekend. Now, not Thursday or Friday, but across the weekend, everyone's multis were home, and people, apparently, Tristan told me, had big bets on Cronulla half-time, full-time, Cronulla to win, Cronulla to cover. So actually, maybe before I talk about Brisbane, let's play Tristan's thoughts and insight into how the bookies did for round nine.
Hello, Tripod family. Tristan Merlihan here from Top Sport. A fascinating weekend where we've had some big upsets and some favourites cover some big lines impressively. So there's either been, from our perspective, some some sizable wins when we've had the big upsets early in the round, where the Broncos getting the result and then obviously the Eels beating Penrith, which a lot of multis are rolling through that. But then aside from that, all the favourites have covered. So we had that run in the middle there where the Storm covered, the Roosters covered, Manly covered, and also the Cowboys did. So there was all strong weighted money for the minus in those games. So it's been an up and down round in that respect. There's obviously a little bit happening in the Sharks game as well with the send-off. I'm doing this at halftime. So fascinating round in that sense that it's been either feast or famine for both us and the punters, which normally you get a bit of a hit and miss, but it's been a bit like that this season. It's probably different, as I touched on Wednesday, where you do get those 11 and 12 point underdogs where they're actually a chance of winning these games now, which probably wasn't the case last year. So it's certainly been interesting in that sense. There's been some high scoring. So there's been a lot of same game multis that have rolled through, which particularly in that Storm game, those last couple of tries pushed the game over. So we'll see how this game pans out. There's still a lot to play out in the Sharks Warriors, and hopefully you're back to winner over the weekend, and we'll talk to you on Wednesday.
We did. We backed the mixed matchup. Sorry, Tristan. He really probably thought it was miraculously gonna get done at that point. Going into the Sharks game, if we go back to that game once again, the smiling face, you can tell, couldn't you? That we only needed the Sharkies to be within two, and we're talking about a 15-point favourite. That's pre-game to win the mixed matchup. But then suddenly when they're playing with 12 and they're down, you really could have easily seen them losing. That's what most people would have expected, and we would have cruelly lost the mixed matchup, which was Manly, Roosters and Sharks to win by 40 combined. In the end, they won by, I think, just over 60 combined. The reason I thought of Tristan was he kind of highlighted it. He specifically said in the Wednesday preview, there's some games where, yes, they're double-digit underdogs, but they're not foregone conclusions, and there's some sides you could see getting the upset, and he specifically mentioned the Broncos and the Eels. So I think that's why I remembered Tristan there. But what I was going to say about Brisbane is any kind of bottom eight side or, mediocre side can pull an upset. It's a good competition. It's why we love the NRL. But Brisbane's done it back-to-back weeks. I think that's what adds the emphasis to it, that they beat Cronulla. And what we saw today, Cronulla's no joke. And then they beat the Rabbitohs, who made the grand final last year, by 20. Yeah, the Rabbitohs have, got Latrell out, but, I mean, the Broncos had Haas and Capewell out, so it's quite incredible. Carrigan, he was back in the nick of time. He was awesome. I think he'll play for Queensland. Flegler off the bench was awesome too. And what can you say about Reynolds? What a difference he makes. Yes, I did question him. I think the week I questioned Reynolds, he was struggling with a knee niggle, and I was just saying, oh, be careful, Brisbane. You paid big money for this guy. He's already here, with a little bit of health concerns. You need him to be fit, but he is delivering. Let's just quickly touch on, what do you make of the Rabbitohs? The game itself, I thought a really key moment was that try saver by Herbie. And I thought Herbie is really lethal on the left edge for Brisbane. It's not like they have to go right to Stags. I think he's having a great season as well. So you've got the outside backs, the forwards stepping up, and they've solved their halves. So Brisbane's flying, sets up a great matchup against Manly. But takeaways from the Rabbits, Podonis, because we look back and now we say, hey, did they only beat the Dogs well because they scored 18 when the Dogs had a sin bin? And did they only beat Manly well because Manly got a send-off, as we've, talked about, till the cows come home? They beat a Dragons in a sloppy game. They lost to the Tigers. So have we been overrating the Rabbitohs this whole time?
Yeah, they're a side that's 4-4, and they do have some excuses. And
4-5 now.
Sorry, 4-5, and you can pinpoint in the last few weeks that they did sort of have a few wins that maybe masked some of their deficiencies in attack. And we sort of felt that heading into the season, they would start a bit slow, especially with Ilias there in halfback, and they would build into the year. But we keep on saying we're waiting for South to put in a great performance, but it's arguable that they went backwards this week. I haven't seen a game from South in a while where so many balls hit the ground on backline plays, left and right side of the field. Normally we were so used to sweeping and quick executed plays down to Alex Johnson, the left, but Walker's still struggling, and Damien Cook's the spearhead that's trying to find something, but when his key playmakers around him aren't delivering, it's very hard to expect him and Cam Murray to do anything in the middle of the field, especially when once the defense is in tune and puts pressure on him. I think that there's a bit of work there for South, but I'm not willing to write them off yet. at the moment is looking a little bit scary once we've got them for a top eight bet. They're sitting just outside of that, but they're still $1.30 to make the eight in the futures market. So people are expecting them to come good. They're still going to get Latrell at some stage in the season. So South will get there eventually, but whether or not they're in that top echelon of sides, I can't say they are at the moment.
No, they've certainly got to prove it before we treat them and bet on them as if they are a top contending side. Doesn't mean they can't get there by the end of the year, but they are not right now. Raiders 14, breaking their losing streak, the much-needed win over the Bulldogs, who managed 4 points in Canberra. What were your key takeaways?
It's another game. I think we're 4-4 this season when we've picked the totals that we like and yes. attack. It's another under that didn't even sweat. So hopefully people out there are smarter than us and they took the under. We gave out the alternative first half try line at 3.5 and it was 10-0 at half time to Canberra.
And that's the best bet if it's 5 cents higher, but it wasn't. So, you know, we can't classify as the best bet. Otherwise, we would have. It was in the multi too.
Yeah, 100%. And then I felt the Dogs started the game well, but then they invited so much pressure, making a few mistakes. And Canberra had about 70% territory in that first half. The Dogs never got any field position. I think it was until the 32nd minute they had a tackle in the Dogs' half. It reminds me of the game where Canberra played Penrith a few weeks back on that Sunday where Penrith restricted them, but it was just in reverse this time with Canberra the one doing all the throttling. And the Dogs didn't seem out of the game though, even though that they had all that possession against them. They defended well, so I'm not going to take anything away from the Dogs. It was one of those games where they didn't have enough territory and possession early. Canberra got a few points and maintained the lead, and the Dogs won the second half, and they tried a few trick shots late. But had the game been a lot tighter, then they probably would have been a bit more cautious in the last 15, 20 minutes. But when they had to throw caution against the wind, it's always hard when you're two scores down with 10 minutes to go, and you are a team like the Dogs that feels like they have to be in front. They can't chase points, and it proved true on Friday.
Yeah, the Bulldogs could have won this game if you didn't see it. If not for all that pressure and all that territory, it was self-inflicted. It was all their own errors that they just had no opportunities. They never got to cycle. They never got to have repeat sets, and it's all their own fault. I couldn't believe how sloppy they were. They were not focused enough. And the Raiders, without Whiten, you know, they were just a bit more desperate, a bit more focused. They built a 14-0 lead. But in saying that, it had all the makings of another Raiders choke. There was a key moment there where it was 14-0. Raiders are on the attack. They force a dropout. Then the Bulldogs recover the dropout. Burton does an early tackle inside his own half kick to the Fox. They make a line break. They score. And they're putting all the pressure on. I think at that point was before a penalty goal. So I think it was that a kick for 12-6, but they never should have been in the game. Maybe it wasn't a 14-0 lead. Maybe it was 12-0. I think Raiders kicked a late penalty. And you're really thinking, uh-oh, like the Doggies are going to come at them here and the Raiders are just thinking, here we go again. But Doggies couldn't quite get there. And when you get a desperate side at home, sometimes that is the difference. That's why we leaned to the Raiders, but didn't have a great deal of confidence in them. And as I say, like you might think they won it comfortably, but considering how bad the Dogs were, they never should have been in that one. Now, another wild result. And Parramatta, the streak busters, we know last year they denied the Storm the chance to break an NRL record and win 20 straight games as a huge underdog. They upset that, you know, nearly unbeatable Melbourne Storm side last year in 2021. And Penrith at home is pretty much the same thing. And Penrith had won 21 straight and were searching for 22 straight. They were denied. Parramatta outright upset 22-20. How did they do it?
Game of the season, this one. Friday night, blockbuster, and Parramatta lifted for the occasion. Last week, they were complacent and a bit lazy, but fully focused this week. And they had to be. They had to be at their best. I don't think Parramatta could have played any better at 22-20, the final score, with Penrith making a late charge there. I felt just before halftime there, Parramatta were the better team in the first half, and the try that the Panthers scored was a little bit fortuitous, given that kickout did lose the ball just past halfway. Don't know how the refs missed that.
I mean, I thought I missed something because you saw him spill it and thought, oh, like I've missed something. It's been ripped out. Yeah, that's an all-time shocker. So to recover from that, crazy, isn't it?
That's right. Recovered from that, went in a 10-all in the end with Penrith scoring a try in the corner there. And that was brilliant play too, by the way, from Kikau when he drew in three defenders and put in a little deft kick. Reminded me of Lionel Messi there, down there on the left wing. But then in the second half, Penrith had all the possession in the first 15 minutes and they were on Parra's goal line, only scored one try. If they scored a second, you probably felt that they run away with it. But Parramatta were pretty resilient, defended well, and they took a couple chances. And in the second half there, they scored two tries, back-to-back tries. The second one, don't know what Dylan Edwards was doing. Just go and catch that bomb and you can set up your team. Just inviting pressure, let the ball bounce and it can go anywhere. Where does it go? Into Dylan Brown's arms. And before you know it, Penrith, after having all that territory, they're down by 8 points and there's only like 8 minutes left on the clock. Score a late try. Nathan Cleary goes up the other end and in all the makings of a 22-all golden point, if you can hit a 40 range field goal, doesn't connect at the best. And straight away, you can see the anguish on his face and Parramatta celebrate like they won a grand final and good on them. But yeah, Penrith don't lose any admirers and Parramatta stamp themselves as a genuine top four team, which we always knew, but people happy to doubt them on the back of last week. But Parramatta will be there or thereabouts, and that was a great semi-finals style encounter.
Don't forget, in the preseason, Parramatta Roosters grand final 50-1. It's not looking that crazy after this weekend. Someone's going to have to beat the Storm, but we'll get to that. Yeah, what a difference 6 days makes. I mean, 6 days earlier, the Eels lost to the Cows by over 30 points. Then you come in and beat Penrith, who had looked unbeatable. So that in itself is crazy. It shows how much, it does show that like Parramatta needs to find that consistency because the best teams dominate every week, but they can match that level. You think back to like a lot of things were against them. They didn't have all their key position players in that second week of the elimination finals, which I believe was in Mackay as well last year, where they pushed Penrith to the absolute wire last year in the final series. And like Penrith goes on and wins the comp, but Parramatta could have easily knocked him out before the prelims. Now To'o returned before this game, and I want to give a shout out in our group. I can't remember the bloke's name. Maybe someone can comment, but bloke in our group tipped Taylor May to be top try scorer at $41 when he got in there and started scoring some tries. And then a few people said, oh, well, there's no point because he's going to lose his spot when To'o's back. But the guy made the claim there that this kid's got talent, May. He could retain his spot. It could be Staines that misses out. And you never know, maybe they even keep him on the left, which is, you know, a happy hunting ground being on the left wing for Penrith. Well, that's what's happened. To'o came back and re-slotted on the right wing. And there's people in our group riding 40-1 on Taylor May. And, you know, he got in again thanks to that beautiful touch by Kikau that you referenced. But what you said there, and I think you said 15 minutes after halftime, I think it was even 20 minutes. I agree. Parramatta won this game in the 20 minutes that they lost 4-0. From the 40th to the 60th minute, they won the game because they only conceded one try in that period. They were under immense pressure that whole time. Every set, Parramatta was bringing it off their own line. They were just trying to get a kick away. At one point, they got a kick charged down. The best kick they could get was about to the Penrith 30. Pretty much Penrith were starting every set on the 30, the 40, or halfway, and they were getting repeat sets. And as I said, they did score one try. And what you see is that's normal Penrith behavior. They do that to everybody. Usually they score more than one try if they get that amount of pressure on you because they're that good. But even if they don't, they break you and they gas you. You cannot withstand that pressure. And I think Parramatta just kept gutsing it out, hanging in the contest, keeping it within a try, staying in the arm wrestle, even though they're losing the territory battle, finally get a penalty, get up Penrith's edge, end. They didn't panic. They forced a repeat set. They stayed up there. And I think two players that I should shout out that were absolutely outstanding, Isaiah Papali, phenomenal in the middle for the Eels, and Gutho. You know, some people question, is he elite? He doesn't do the highlight plays that some of the other stars, like your Teddies, your Turbos, your Pappies, but he's everywhere. And it was a class bit of ball playing by Gutho that put Madison through for the try that gave him the lead. Now, when you let a bomb bounce, as Penrith did a couple minutes later, can go anywhere. And that was very unlucky and very lucky for Parramatta to score that one. But that only extended the lead. And then, you know, Penrith got in really late as well. So I think whichever way you boil it down, well-deserved win by Parramatta. I agree with you. I didn't really take a lot away from Penrith. They can't be an A-plus every single week. And they were beaten by a very deserving side. Let's move to Saturday. Another game we had a best bet. And a few talking points out of this one as well. Manly 36 beat the Tigers 22. Our best bet, which just snuck home, was Manly 13 plus. What did you take away from this one, Podonis?
It was another example of getting the best of the number, because just before kickoff, you could get plus 15 or 16 on the Tigers. And that was even with a few injuries that Manly had. Schuster was ruled out on Thursday, which really hurt us. But then, yeah.
And Olakau'atu the day later.
Yeah. And Olakau'atu on Friday afternoon there. But yeah, so we got 13 plus. It was 13 and a half on Wednesday. So for those who liked Manly, that was the best of the number, and you would have won by half a point. And we touched on the multi losing, but yeah, the Tigers were down by, I think the score was
18-0.
18-0 early. It was 14-0 at halftime, and yep. Manly had a man advantage. I think it was a pretty harsh sin bin as well to the Tigers there. And then the Tigers were pretty resilient in the second half, considering that they did look up at the scoreboard once it resumed at 13-all and they were down 18. And they scored a few tries in the second half, threw caution to the wind, passed the ball around. And I don't know whether Manly got a little bit complacent, thinking the game was done and dusted. It was sure anything but, especially when it was 18-12 at one point. I think the Tigers got it back 18-10. I think they got it back to an 8-point two-score game. And then Manly put on the afterburners in the second half there and scored a few tries. Shout out to Ben Trbojevic getting a try on his debut starting centre.
A double,
yeah. And it was great for all the brothers to celebrate, and his family was in the crowd, and big Brookvale Saturday afternoon. And Manly were just a little bit too good. But again, some question marks perhaps over Manly's ability to close out these games against these poorer teams.
Well, I think that's partly because they didn't have Schuster and Olakau'atu. So I'll start there. I loved this bet on Wednesday. All the makings for a big Manly performance. But if you think about why they were so good last year, of course it was on the back of Turbo, and it was his first game back. But we didn't expect him to single-handedly win them this game by three tries. They got Schuster back, you know, a week earlier. Olakau'atu had been suspended. He was back. That back row was as good as any in the competition. Then you take those two players out. That's a significant downgrade. And yet the line climbed, which just makes me think if those players hadn't been out, that legitimate line for that game could have been 18 or higher, honestly. And I would have felt really confident. But I was kind of saying to people, look, I'm happy because we played 13 plus and the line's, you know, 16 now. But, you know, I'd much rather that those couple of back rows were still in there. And I think that's part of the reason why they didn't close the game out. Sinbin helped them get in front, though. As you say, 14-0 halftime, harsh Sinbin on Yuta Kamano. He'd only been on the field for like 30 seconds, but it was repeat infringements. Mind you, I think it was harsh because Manly gave away some repeat infringements second half. They didn't face that severe of a penalty. Get a long-range try second half, you're up 18-0, and then you're thinking it can be a flogging because a lot of adversity are going against Wes and Manly have got their tails up and they're at home. Someone can explain to me why it was a record home attendance for Manly. They must have renovated the stadium. I just don't understand why playing the Tigers, they would get their record highest ever attendance. But you're right, like the stadium was buzzing. But give credit to West because they didn't die wondering. They stuck in there for the fight. They returned the favour with a long-range try, Garner himself. And I feel like Hastings is in everything. I really am impressed by this guy and what he's doing. And I felt like he kind of dragged them back into the game. And because our mixed matchup, we wanted Manly to win not just 13-plus but by a big score. And suddenly, not only were they not going to win by a big score, the result wasn't even certain, as you say. Tigers are coming for Manly and it's 18-10. A conversion was missed that could have made it 18-12. I didn't have any confidence that Manly was going to stop West at the end. So it was only lucky that Manly scored a couple of times themselves just to get that separation again. Just enough separation for us. We win a close best bet, which is a nice feeling because we haven't won too many of the close ones this year. But a 14-point victory cashes your 13-plus best bet and laid the foundation for our mixed matchup, which was then carried on in Mackay as the Roosters won 44-16. Maybe a couple of nervous moments in the first half, but then they just were clinical after that, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. And this game has more to do with the Titans being poor than I think the Roosters were good. I think the Roosters will still say that they weren't at their best, even though you look at the scoreboard and see 44 points scored. Titans scored the first try of the game and then felt like deja vu with the Roosters letting us down, given that they started a bit sloppy, making a few errors. But then once the Roosters got going, shout out to James Tedesco scoring a hat trick and looking as brilliant as ever after copping some doubt and criticism over the past few weeks. Especially people were saying that Pappenhausen's going to take his number one spot in Origin, which I think is a bit crazy because I think Turbo's second if you had to swap out Tedesco for anyone. But in saying that, yeah, the Roosters were clinical in the second half. And the Gold Coast, some of that defending at times was just schoolboyish. Pretty poor one-on-one, missed tackles. The Roosters didn't even have to try too hard to make their line break. So a bit of a head-scratcher for Holbrook. And I question, and shout-out to you, Jacob, because you did question a few weeks ago whether or not there was something deeper within that club, within the four walls of the Gold Coast. And other players playing for Holbrook, not quite sure. And it feels like there's something deeper behind the scenes there that's going to derail their season.
Yeah, I mean, we can't take too much credit for reading the Titans situation well because we learnt the hard way because we trusted them a couple of weeks. I think when you bet on a side and you think they're in a good, favourable conditions to play well and then they don't, you really question, well, what's going on? Because they should have played so much better in that game up in North Queensland. Mind you, we underrated the Cows and I don't want to relitigate all that, but just got the sense something was wrong. And I think they got a bit of false sense of security that because Penrith were off their game last week, the Titans somehow took a real moral victory out of that. See, boys, see, we can hold a really good team to under 20, like as if they'd solved their issues by losing to Penrith by 14, when really Penrith played with their food. But in this one, the Titans got a great start. Suali fumbled a pickup in the in goal and the Titans score. And you just don't want to give a poor side a bit of confidence and a good start. So I was a little bit worried. But then the Roosters struck straight back, Teddy throwing people off him. So that's pretty poor defense. Kelly, a bad miss. And then the Roosters had a sin bin and you're worried again, like it's a pretty level game and you've got to play with 12 and Verrills was injured and he was out for the game as well. But Sydney actually extended their lead in the time they were a man down. And in fact, they built the lead from being 4-0 down to 24-4 up, including a TKO try where he just barged over the Titans. So this was similar to the Manly game where Manly was up 18-0 and I thought, man, this is going to win really well. Well, the Roosters were up 24-4 and you go, oh, here we go. Roosters are going to put a 50 spot on them. And then similar to the Manly game, there was a fight back. The Titans scored again off a kick right before halftime. They scored right after halftime. It was 24-16. And suddenly we're not covering the line anymore. Our mixed matchup's not a certainty where we thought we were going to get a nice big win. But the difference was that's where the comeback ended for the Titans, whereas the Roosters got back on top, didn't let up. As you say, don't give them too much credit because the Titans were really bad. They've got a winnable game next week. I remember off the top of my is it Titans Dragons next week possibly?
Yeah.
So Titans, I mean that's a huge one because you'd kind of say their season's almost already gone, but your season can't really be gone in round nine. But they've got major issues. And as you say, it's an effort, it's an application thing, and the defense is just not good enough. But don't worry, Titans fans, because next year you're going to get Kieran Foran. So I'm sure that will solve all your issues. Saturday night, your beloved North Queensland Cowboys, 36-16. I did kind of talk you out of that going anywhere near the plus 16 and a half, thankfully, although I was feeling bad at halftime where the Knights had the lead in this game that I'd talked you out of another winner. But Cowboys came home strong in the second half.
Yeah, they did. And let's call it one-on-one because they covered the first half line and they even had a halftime lead tonight. And what do we always say? If there's a big underdog, we like him in the first half more than the match line because if the game gets away from him, then it can steamroll in the second half. And that's exactly what happened. And you talked about in the Penrith game that the Eels won it in that 20 minutes just after halftime. And in the 10 minutes just after halftime here, that's where the Knights exactly lost it. I think it was Phoenix Crossland dropped the ball in the 41st minute just after halftime. And then Tulungi made a line break. Cowboys scored next play. And then the Knights didn't touch it for 9 minutes. And then when they look up at the scoreboard, it's 24-16. Cowboys running two tries in the first 8 minutes just after halftime. And then the Knights are always chasing and they're a team that can't chase points. I do give them credit for the way that they defended in that first half. And I did stick it to the Cowboys, considering that it was 3 hours since they scored a try heading into the game. It was a brilliant performance in the first half for what that side's capable of. And they did have a few issues. And they did also bring in a new halves combination with Crossland playing in there and dropping Clune, although he may have been injured anyway. Can't remember what happened on Wednesday when the team list came out, whether he was injured. But besides the point, the Knights, there's some issues there, and they're going to be fighting in the bottom three, and more of the same for them, more punishment, and feel sorry for their fans.
The one thing is the Knights will have a few players coming back. Kloon could be one of them, but yeah, Hoy moved into the halves, but actually they played differently. Ponga basically played as another half in attack. He touched the ball a lot more, had a beautiful hand in their opening try, which was a nice scrum play. And as you say, a bit of some flashes in attack, scored three tries first half, had a lead, had some belief, but then the Cowboys just got back on top and the Knights dropped their heads, and you can't afford to do that. They got a few young players, and I think we know that the Cowboys forward pack, it's not a one-man show like it has been the last couple of years. So we've talked about like Cotter, and he was great again, and Nanai, the talent of this kid, and he's such an aerial threat. But another player we haven't mentioned who benefits off that go forward is Robson. Really good hooker that maybe we haven't realized his ability, because he's been playing behind a beaten forward pack for the last couple of seasons, but it's not the case anymore. So the Cowboys comprehensive winners by 20. Congratulations, earning a little bit more of Podonis's respect every week. And one last final game to chat about, which was the earlier game Sunday, was Melbourne Storm, more of the same, 42-6 over the Dragons. And it was a huge line to lay. It was 22.5 when we did the pod. It got up as high as 24.5 today. So we weren't going to lay it, but we didn't have the confidence to take it with the Dragons. So no harm done for us. But did you learn anything in this one?
The only thing I learned is the Storm just kept getting better each week. I don't even feel like the Dragons played that poorly. They were in the game for large periods and they defended well in the first half, but just goes to show that Melbourne just gets some sniff of that door open and they come crashing through it. And Pappenhausen only played 50 minutes. That's one to monitor. He hurt his knee in the first half getting tackled into touch, but then I think when he scored that try in the second half for his second, he may have pulled a hamstring. So that's one to note for in the coming weeks, whether or not he does get named this week. And it's a massive game for them against the Panthers in Magic Round. Which would have been a sold-out crowd regardless, but that should just be a standalone fixture. What a game that is next week. But I feel like the Dragons couldn't have done anything better, and then they look up at the scoreboard and they're down by 30 points and they score a consolation try towards the end, but Melbourne more of the same and the machine rolls on.
I won't go as far to say Dragons couldn't have done anything better. I think we're seeing their limitations. I thought their attack was pretty average, and it goes back to the point of like Mbai's your fullback, and if he's going to be your fullback and not add anything in attack, can he make a tackle when there's a line break? Or is he just going to try and resemble a statue back there? That was quite embarrassing. And that really was emblematic of the Dragons' attack. Like, they didn't really have anything on. Jack Bird just running sideways. Then he was trying to do an offload. He got hit as he was offloading. He spilled it. And you went from a Dragons on the attack to Melbourne not just diving on a loose ball, picking it up and taking it back 90 metres while embarrassing and by. And that pretty much summed up the two sides. But you're right, like the Storm, they've won their last 3 weeks by nearly, I think it's by an average of 48 margin of victory the last three. It's insane. Now, Pappy twisted his knee early. I would just take him off. It was so obvious that he was limping and labouring. And they said at halftime, is your knee okay? Oh, it's a bit jammed. I don't even know what that means, a jammed up knee. He was limping, and then he tore his hammy potentially, or strained his hammy, probably because his body was compensating, trying to run full speed because it was an open field break. And like, that just shows how incredible of a player he is. He was backing up and he scored a try on a bad knee while he was limping. But that could be an injury that robs us of, you know, one of the star players of the game of the season, which is next week. So it's really disappointing. That's the only blemish on this Storm side. Other than that, they're a ruthless machine, and it's great timing that they're going to come up against Penrith. Penrith will be smarting off that defeat. And the Dragons, yeah, I think, if anything, off three straight wins, limitations shown that they hadn't played anybody of the caliber of that Melbourne side. So that wraps up the weekend of results, guys. Obviously an awesome weekend for us. And the best part is that the people who follow us, we can help you enjoy the weekend even more. By rewarding you guys and giving you guys great tips, which is what we always try and do. And at least, thankfully, it's gone our way the last couple of weeks. But I actually will now wrap this pod just on a little bit on a somber note. And that is because you guys are tuning in, you're watching, you're listening to the Tripod. And the Tripod would not exist if it wasn't for Alex to start it with me 7 years ago. I'm putting in 6 years of hard work to carry this thing on. And, you know, Alex may or may not be watching, listening right now with everything that's going on. And I won't go into any details, but I will say that we watch this footy every weekend, and sometimes we think it's, you know, we think it's life or death, but it really is nothing compared to what other things that life can throw at you. So just end the pod saying, on behalf of the whole pod community, we love Alexi. Our thoughts are with him and his family. Guys, we've got a huge week coming up. Obviously, Magic Round. We've actually got a bonus show Thursday. With more info to come. We'll tell you about that on Wednesday. But we've got heaps coming up. So Magic Round. So we'll be back there Wednesday to talk all about it and try and find some more winners. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks, Padonis. We'll see you guys on Wednesday.
No worries. And happy Mother's Day to everyone out there. Go and buy your mother something nice with all the money you won this weekend following our tips. Lego.
Thanks for that, mate. I meant to also say happy Mother's Day for all our wonderful mums out there. Thanks for capping it on that, mate. Cheers. See you guys Wednesday.